On this episode of New Tech People, I chat with Jess Vanderbrugen, Digital Optimization Manager at NIB. We talk about her career at NIB, her time working overseas, and a transition back into the technology market in Newcastle. Jess's role sits somewhere in between marketing and technology, so it's a growing area, that space. So really interesting to get her insights into the growth in that world and how technology and data is affecting her role. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to episode 10 of New Tech People with Jess Vanderbrugen from NIB.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So it's good to get another female on the podcast, which is great. Jess and I were just talking off podcast about trying to build that community, so we'll go into that in a little bit of detail. But I think for people that don't know you, give us a quick overview of who you are.
Okay, yeah. So I'm Digital Optimization Manager at NIB. I have been in charge of growing our optimization capability over the past 3 to 4 years. What does that mean? I basically run experiments on the site to increase sales, understand our customers, and kind of validate ideas and concepts within the business. So this is a role that's kind of came out of trying to help the business make better decisions about where to spend their money on development resources. So saying that this is worth X amount, we should be worrying about that first before project B. So that's kind of how this has developed over time, increasing the optimization capability. And now it's kind of within the business grown quite a lot. It's really cool. And this kind of podcast has been really good for me to be able to reflect on that. Like how I've got there.
I was going to say, it's a pretty newly created type role, right? Like these roles didn't probably exist 5 years ago. So where did you come from? How do you find yourself into a role like that?
It's basically something I've grown myself, right? Yeah. So I have been in and out of NIB a couple of times. So I moved down to Melbourne straight out of school. I'm from Maitland originally. Yeah. And I studied information systems and technology. Yeah, so I went into car sales as a content manager there because I was always interested in that side of things, which was a really cool place to start up. They had just been turning from a startup into an actual organization, big organization that was kind of taking on the automotive industry itself. So that was really interesting. And I wanted to go to Europe. So to do that, I came back home and there was a job at NIB for me. So I came back for a year for that.
Awesome.
And did like a web solutions designer. That's an interesting role, like title that you don't hear anymore, but that gave me a lot more experience in kind of that front end content management type of thing.
Cool.
And then went over to London, was a digital project manager for an agency over there, which kind of was another aspect of looking at the agency side of things. But that wasn't something that I necessarily was interested in because I couldn't deep dive.
Yeah.
And I got hit up by NIB again to come back for a big project to be a digital producer. So what does that mean? That was, basically the metrics of how we're going to measure what we're delivering and kind of the analysis of what it is that we should deliver. So that is where my new journey with NIB started in terms of growing into digital optimization manager, because I've always been kind of that SEO metrics focused and that opportunities type of focus for my how my brain works, basically. Yeah, right. So that kind of then became an online analyst role as a group diversified.
Yeah.
And then, I basically one day was like, look, this is bigger than just being an analyst.
Yeah.
I need someone to help me with reporting and I need to focus on experimentation if we're going to take the business where it needs to go.
Awesome.
And so I've been that for 3 to 4 years now, which is super exciting. And we're kind of at the next level of that now. I've got 3 reports and we're starting to go down a path of a premium optimization product, which is just going to take us to the next level in that space. So very exciting.
There's a couple of really interesting points out of that. First one, I guess, was probably there's a lot of people in their careers that go through the career and they move around a little bit or they stay within the same company. But you mentioned a point just there. You made the call to say, hey, this is bigger. This is bigger than what I'm currently doing and building a role like that. So you took it upon yourself to create this new role.
Yes.
How do you go about that? What's your thoughts around people? A lot of people are in roles at the moment and they think, hey, there's an opportunity to do something bigger. It might be within a more traditional organization. You think, hey, there's a spot to be doing something bigger, better or better. How do you go about that?
So first of all, I'm really lucky that NIB is quite flexible and open to those kind of discussions, more so than maybe your traditional areas. But I guess I was lucky enough to build my credibility in the space in the few years that I had been there already. So I had that on my side. And what I had started doing was proving out this is what this role needs to be and this is what it could be. So showing the work that I needed to do and what it could be with the help of someone else as well as going down a dedicated direction, that kind of helped me get through there. It was, I want to say it's a difficult discussion to have, but it wasn't because it was kind of, I had made it that it was writing on the wall that this was the direction that we wanted to go in. I had engagement with the wider business, so talking with marketing, talking with the delivery guys, you know, we want to do more in this space. So getting that appetite up as well as running a few experiments, and you can see the benefit of doing a couple. Imagine if we had an entire stream of this going constantly, the value that it would be able to provide.
I think it's an interesting perspective. I think it's right on the mark. Like I think the best advice there is get some runs on the board, right? Get some runs on the board. You've already shown it.
Yeah.
You got some proof. Done some small experiments, got some proof there, and then it makes it an easy discussion, right?
Exactly, yeah.
That's cool. And then your role is obviously extremely data-driven now, right, which is, once again, data, whilst it's not new, there's still a lot of companies that are investing down that data route just yet or are tiptoeing in there.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on, you know, where that's come from and how big a role that data's playing in your role?
It is insane for people not to be measuring how things perform on their website. So many companies do that. We've got, you know, we've had experience of bringing in new sites under our remit and they're not measuring how things are performing. They come in as a blank slate. For me, that is insane, right? How are you able to prove out the worth of things if you're not measuring it? And I suppose that is something that has come into light with pushing people to measuring and getting metrics and having that data ready. As you can imagine, we have data everywhere at NIB and kind of there's work to bring that together. We focus a lot around a digital offering, so our websites.
Yeah.
And, that has increased over time of bringing in standards to say this is how we're going to track things. So that does go as part of the delivery journey. This is what needs to happen as we're building these sites. Otherwise, we can't say that this is a win. We can't put the runs on the wall and we can't prove to the business why they should be investing more time with us. Data is a very strong point of this discussion and that argument to make with your business around the performance of things and showing your worth.
Cool. So if you had, let's say, a company that you're about to bring on board and they weren't tracking anything, so blank slate, they would come on board. Let's say there's a company out there that's doing this in Newcastle at the moment.
Yeah.
What would be your starting point? How would you go about taking a blank slate from a we're not tracking anything to get some basics on board to really help them go forward? What would be like the first couple of points?
Yeah, so look, Google Analytics in its basic form is something. It's understanding how users are using your site. You can set up goals so you know whether you're actually getting a win through these channels and what's happening there. So at a base level, Google Analytics needs to be there. And then your tracking of your funnel is key. You want to know where people are dropping off. You want to know why they're getting through. You want to know what channels they're coming through for that. So that's another aspect is tagging up your campaigns so that you know how these campaigns are actually performing on your site, which a lot of people do blindly, which is not advised.
No, that's cool. I think that's an interesting, I guess, starting point at least, right?
Yeah. And I think, that regular reporting of that, so start getting those metrics out to your team, to your business, allows you to get more time to spend on looking into your data and getting that all set up right.
Makes it easy to get more budget allocation and more headcount allocation as well, right?
Definitely.
Once you've got the data there and you can prove what you're doing works, that's an easier conversation to have.
Yeah, and it allows you to play more on site as well when you know that you have certain segments that you can perhaps personalize, or you're probably not there yet, but, you know, personalize or change an experience for.
Cool.
That's great.
Nice. Let's swing it right back to you. That's cool. That's a little bit of a deep dive, more technical. But grew up in Maitland, and then so you did your degree, and then you moved to Melbourne, back to Newcastle, then to London, back to Newcastle. There's a lot of people, I guess, grow up in Newcastle, stay in Newcastle. There's probably even more so now people that grew up in Newcastle, went to Sydney or went to a major city for work, and then we're trying to bring them back because there are more opportunities here.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of benefit in, you know, moving away and the lessons you can learn and then bringing that back. What was your experience in, you know, what you've picked up in Melbourne and London, or just your experience in general about going away and then coming back?
Yeah, so I think it is definitely something that people should challenge themselves to do. Go and work for these companies in a complete different environment to what you've grown up in. I think I've been really lucky, I'll say that a lot, in that I've worked for these companies that have a really great environment, really great people who are really switched on. And so there's a lot of growth opportunity with that. So car sales, for instance, like I fell into that job basically, and it just steered my career in the right path because I had supportive people who were pushing me to be better and go down a specific stream of technology. So that diversified my mindset. I was able to see all these different tech. So they were probably using some of the more advanced tech when I first started with them.
Yeah.
And similarly, when I came to NIB to Newcastle, I had a lot to give them because they were still using kind of older stuff and had simple 101 things that I could really improve. And I think that's what's been really great about diversifying my companies that I've been working with, is being able to actually boost places like NIB, who have been in Newcastle, who have kind of been small and are growing, well, are quite big now, but they were smaller one day too.
Yeah.
So it's been great for that aspect. I think working over in the UK, the mobile first scenario was key over there. And I remember coming back and was like, mobile first, and it was deprioritized.
Yeah.
And now mobile traffic is like 55-60% of our website users, more than a desktop. And it's like, if that kind of thinking is like, we could have been ahead because we're focusing on things that, and I guess that's the thing with working overseas, is your tech is ahead of the game of what Australia is up to.
Yeah.
So it's a good way to kind of bring those kind of learnings back.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I think that's I think companies can benefit, right? To bring in people with fresh advice, might have different experience sets, being overseas, being a different city or something like that. Those big companies especially, like, they tend to be playing with newer technologies. Or even the startup companies, they're playing with, a lot of the time they're playing in newer technologies as well. And if you can pick someone up from that's got some experience there and bring that back.
I think the motivation of being there as well. So if you work in small traditional style businesses in Newcastle in one area for your entire career, you're not going to realize what that type of motivation and energy is of that environment where they are very advanced or trying new tech.
It's just exposure, right? It's just exposure to it. I think you don't know until you've seen it, right, or experienced it.
Yeah.
Well, let's wheel further back then, before London, before Melbourne. Mm-hmm. What compelled you to get in technology to begin with?
This is a really uninteresting fact about me. is that I just was really good at it.
Yeah.
So that was something that it always kind of came quite naturally to me, working with computers, working with technology. So I kind of continued down that path, I suppose. So year 8 and 9 was my elective. I was one of the only girls in the class. So I got special treatment from the teacher because, you know, it's like there's a girl in the class. We've got to make sure she's really interested in IT.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed that aspect. And I guess what ended up happening is I just kept doing the IT classes because I knew I would get good grades because it came naturally. And I think something for me, if it comes naturally, you feel good about it and you feel like you're in a good space and it kind of can push you to find new opportunities in that space, I suppose. So I didn't really care that I was the only girl in the class. It's never really been a worry of me. I was more concerned with, oh, I can do this, I do it well, I may as well do it well so I get the good grades as well. So, yeah, it's always just kind of been interest and I've been good at it. So it's kind of not like, oh, technology, I want to do that. It was more, I can do that. Yeah. And look, I can build web pages and this is really fun. Remember GeoSlides? Yeah, I had dancing peppers like on my first computer slide. So anyway, it's funny.
Wow, that's cool. And I think, you know, the fact that you find it easy, people tend to succeed when they're comfortable, right? And, you know, if they're comfortable and they can do well at something, you're more motivated to continue down that route.
Yeah.
You did mention like you're one of only one or two females?
In some classes I'd be like one of maybe five, but in most I was either one of one or two.
Yeah.
In year 12 I decided to do software design because I didn't like biology anymore, so I had to play catch up and I was the only girl in that class. And that was fine. I had friends in the class, so I was supported.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the aspects of that is not everyone can feel comfortable in a room full of guys, right? And it's one of those things that I've never really been worried about, but it could be quite intimidating and probably a factor into why there isn't as many girls, because it's like, oh, that's a boys' class.
Yeah.
And I suppose that was always the vibe back in school life as well.
Do you think that's changed?
I'm not sure. So on a school level, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I haven't turned back. No.
Yeah. You're not hanging out of high school.
When my son has hit that point. Yeah. But, I haven't noticed change. I've noticed the change in women now, but back then, I don't know whether the school has changed. I assume it probably would have. There's a lot more prevalence of laptops in classrooms and people using technology just to do the average school life type things. So, yeah, I'm not sure if it's changed from a mentality point.
Yeah. How do you think we encourage more females to get into technology? I think you've obviously done well in your career and you've grown through it and you've been given many opportunities. I'm not being given, you've worked and you've earned many opportunities.
Yeah.
How do we encourage more females to get into technology, do you think?
This is a really interesting point for me. I guess a part of it does start in that school level, at that school level. You know, technology isn't just programming, being sysadmin and all that type of thing, and networks, like connecting networks.
Yeah.
It's not all about that. There is a different side. And so maybe not just for women, but for all kids to understand what is available in the digital space for them to work on. What is in technology? What does technology mean? You know, it's so diverse now, like the building of a website is many things other than what we were taught initially about IT processes and things like that. It's not all about understanding the zeros and ones, which someone might find really boring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how do you kind of get people into the school saying, hey, these are different career paths. It's no longer just a dentist or a fireman or a policeman or insert generic businesswoman here, you know, like one day I'm going to work in business, you know, that kind of thing is no longer how jobs work.
I know, I completely agree.
So, yeah, how do we get that happening at a school level? I think in women in tech space is and has grown a lot, especially over the past 5 years. I keep referencing the past 5 years, but it has grown a lot. There are groups dedicated, women in product, women in technology, dev women, you know, all this kind of thing. The support is there, and women are really firing up because they've got that support and are able to bring their ideas to the table. I think I didn't go, but with the DevOps Day that was recent, I think there was some, there was a lot of women talkers at that event, women speakers at that event. And that's just a really good reflection that people care about bringing women on board now, and there is support for that, and women can do it and are seen to be just the same as men in this space. So I think that's kind of a good direction to head for people who, oh, what am I going to do? I kind of really like working in technology, but am I going to be successful? Oh, there is all these groups available that I could be a part of. I think that also helps support that.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a growing support for it. Yeah, I think it's being encouraged better and better, which is great.
Yeah.
And I think your other point there about, you know, what is technology? Technology is not just ones and zeros. You don't have to be, you know, sitting in a dark corner just banging away on a keyboard.
And that might be your thing. Yeah. And that's okay too, right? Correct. So we've got, you know, heaps of DevOps type people and administrators at NIB. And, you know, that's just their jam. That's what they're into. But
that's not
everyone. Yeah, that's not everything. And that's not all what technology is about.
I completely agree. I think some people are brilliant at that. Some people enjoy that, and that's their jam. And then there's other bits where you said technology, where does the line for technology stop, right? Like technology and business, there's so much overlap now, and you don't have to be somebody that, you know, wants to get into the nitty-gritties of, you know, back-end infrastructure or, you know, in coding. There's a lot to be done within the greater realm of technology in business that there's more and more opportunities that, you know, you could lend your skills to. You don't have to be that super technical person by nature.
Yeah. And I do think there is an element of having to put yourself out there as a woman in technology. Is you really have to step up into that and be like, I'm here and I want to succeed, you know. Because, that's, I guess from my perspective, that's a little bit of your duty to the other women out there who want to be in tech and doing what you do and having that success. You know, you need to show them that can happen and that there is support for them to do that.
Yeah, it's having other people to aspire to, right? Other people that have paved the way, so to speak. So I think that's really important. Other people that I can speak to that have been there and done that before and be like, hey, I've seen somebody else do that and succeed. It is possible.
Yeah.
Cool. I think it's a long journey, right?
We're
definitely nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know where the step is, and you know, how do you help women realize that they actually are interested in technology?
So
many people go down the path of, oh, I guess I'm just going to do marketing, and they don't really realize that there's elements of marketing in technology. And well, marketing is now becoming technology driven. So
there's not too many billboard creators.
So, you know, just understanding how it all ties in together has to happen earlier than 5 years after you've started a career. You know, it has to.
Although it's not too late.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, well, I think it's good to have people like you out there. So. Helping pave the way, which is great. You mentioned education. You did software at high school, and then you went and did a degree.
Yes. So it was either going to be information technology or become a dentist. Didn't get the grades to become a dentist. So information technology it was. So, yeah, I went down to Melbourne and studied information systems and technology down there, and I enjoyed it. It really helped me understand what I was into, what I wasn't into, and gave me a broad understanding of technology that I think has helped me achieve as much as I have. For instance, you know, you might take on a project and people will think about this part, but how it relates to the back end and, you know, the router setup and things like that has helped in being able to say, it's actually not a difficult question to ask IT to do this for you.
Yeah.
Like, there is different levels of understanding that I think have been really great that have come out of things I've had to do as part of my degree. So, yeah, I would do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I have. Like, I've heard very mixed responses to university degrees, but probably one common part which you just mentioned is that sort of that broader base understanding which you've got to sort of build a career upon. So,
yeah.
And I think there's that other part that you just mentioned there is just that I think the people that are succeeding in the technology world at the moment and the people that are going up the chain are the people who understand where technology fits within a business and vice versa. So both how technology helps enable the business and then also if you're working on a business problem, how can you bring a technology along? How can the technology teams help make that problem easier?
And I think, you know, there is a lot to be said. I think I heard a few of your speakers talk around universities not being up to date and things like that. And that's definitely an issue, but it definitely is able to send you down a path or recognize something that you're interested in. I think there's a lot to be said for the people that can just get all their experience up and take on a problem or a technology and just learn it, self-learn, go far. I have friends that have done excellent work without a uni degree, but they're a different type of person, right? So I need structure, I need structured learning, and I need that something that says you will get a grade at the end of this to aspire me to learn it and pass, right? Whereas some people are just happy to take on that technology and they do really well as well, but they have to be that type of person that can really just go hard or go home, you know?
Yeah, I think it is it's a situation where it's not a – it's not a situation that suits everyone, but there's other options out there now, but it is obviously beneficial to some people. So down that track, there are other options out there now for either self-learning or other short courses and things like that out there. Have you done any other training or any other education that you think has been beneficial?
I haven't. I am constantly looking at different education courses that are out there. And I guess, you know, there's a overarching theme of like an MBA. Will that actually help me be better at something? I guess for me, I have a lot of regard for formal training, and that's kind of why I constantly am thinking about, well, do I do a digital marketing course so that I tick that box in terms of having that formal training? So it looks good and I know that I can feel comfortable with what my understanding is. But there's also this aspect of I have been working in this space for so long. Am I going to go along to this course and just be like, oh, well, actually, let me tell you what's going on. So there's this kind of differing levels of what I should invest my time in. I think if you do have the time and you can spend the money or get your company to spend the money on you, I think it is definitely something worth exploring. But, yeah, I haven't necessarily got stuck into anything as yet.
Yeah. Once again, I think it's an individual approach, right? Some people like to rack up the certs. Other people don't. It's, once again, I don't think there's any one right way to go about it.
Yeah.
Different people succeed at different avenues, so it's just interesting to get different people's opinions on things like that.
Definitely.
Cool. Outside of that then, outside of like formal certs or things like that, what do you do to sort of stay current with, is it podcasts, is it books, blogs?
I guess I'm not a big podcast person.
Podcasts suck.
I don't even know why I'm not here. No, a lot of my friends are into podcasts. They're not part of my flow. So I guess book recommendations I get off others, and one that I'm reading at the moment is called Black Box Thinking, which is all about your failures and learning from them. And so I'm halfway through that book. But, yeah, so my boss recommended that and it's great. I rely heavily on my network to curate what I read. So whether that's coming from my colleagues, there might be things like on the Stratechery blog, I think it is called, or Stratech, I don't even know how to say it, but Stratechery maybe, which is really good around the actual technology side that I don't see that much. On LinkedIn, I've become a hawk on LinkedIn, just waiting for a good article to come up. So my contacts from Optimizely are putting some great conversion optimization type articles up there. And I guess that's one thing for me is being specialized and focused on optimization. I'm finding it difficult to find that type of content online that isn't, hey, this is how you run a test. Yeah. We're beyond that now. We are like next level. Tell me how I can really push the boundaries of what I'm trying to do in my role. And so that's been difficult in trying to find that, how do I stay current type of thing. So it really is about the relationships with people who are working in it every day that I've been trying to pull out different articles of interest.
Well, I guess in that space in particular, right, like it moves so quickly, there's new tools that are coming out so frequently that if someone was to write a book, by the time it's published, it's probably irrelevant.
Yeah.
Or not, maybe not irrelevant, but not current.
Yeah.
So the blogs and maybe the podcasts tend to be on top of that, on what's going on right now, what are the tools being currently used, what's the best bang for your buck, what's the best tools out there with the different features.
I suppose I spend a lot of my time thinking about the strategy behind what I'm doing and how I might approach things and get better. So I like to optimize my optimization process. You know, it's terrible.
But what's that look like?
It's hectic, constant. So what was I going to say? So I've been looking at the McKinsey app recently that has heaps of strategy type conversations in it, and it's really thought provoking. So it's like, and that's what I need, like 5-minute snapshots for me to read and go, I'm going to think about that and how it might tie into what I do. I find it difficult investing hours into reading books and things like that. I'm reading a book on how to raise children, you know, like that's where I'm juggling my time, that raising work, profile, or, you know, raising a boy. So yeah, it's this kind of thing of juggling all that, but, I kind of heavily rely on my network to just bring things to the table.
Yeah, I think that's not a challenge. Like, it's a challenge that everyone faces, right? I think there's so many people out there, like, everyone's got the best intentions to learn more, to, you know, to be on top of everything, but trying to find time in the day to do that and invest in that is very difficult. Even with the best intentions, you can block out something, but something important comes up and it's going to get shoved to the back.
And so I guess I go along to conferences and things like that, which a lot of the time I have started to realize, oh, well, I'm not necessarily someone sitting in the room. I should be at the front of the room, that those type of aspects. But they're a great way of meeting interesting people, seeing what they're doing, and then getting kind of, oh, have you read this, or getting recommendations from that, because I find that curating my own list of content is just too difficult. There's just so much being brought out. How do I know that it's at the level that I'm at?
Cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned one productivity tool there, I guess, or tool that you're using, one app you're using on a daily basis. Is there anything else you use on a daily basis from a productivity or life perspective?
Yes. So I'm a Google Docs fiend. I have tried Trello, I've tried Jira, I've tried Asana, I've tried this little thing that pops up on your web browser. Nothing works as great as just having a Google Word doc of my week and all my meetings and all my notes in it, and spreadsheets in there, and I can access it everywhere. I can have my phone, I've got an idea, I can write it down and it will be there when I go. So as unexciting as it is, Google Docs is my friend. And I don't know what I would do without it. It's starting to go into my home life. I'm like, how can I organize everything? I'm like, just calm down, you know. But Google Docs is definitely up there. LinkedIn and the McKinsey app is something that I've started using, but that's not really productivity. It's more opportunity generating, I suppose.
Yeah, but that's still interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome. You mentioned your other key responsibility outside of work, being a mum.
Yes.
How have you found juggling work and outside of work?
It's been going quite well, actually. So it's actually been a year since I've been back in some capacity, which is cool. I noticed the other day. I was like, oh, yes. Anyway, so I guess now I feel like I'm getting in the swing of things a bit more. And it's, for me, it's like, well, how do I ramp up the work that I'm doing in networking, I guess, with the Newcastle tech scene? How am I going to different conferences and kind of building up that presence again? Because I find that really valuable. As I said, having a good network of people to kind of tell me the hot tips, so I don't have to go find them myself, is good. So yeah, it's been going good. I've got a flexible workplace, so I'm only 4 days a week, and I don't think I'll change that anytime soon because it just helps me do the washing. No. So I guess I'm very lucky in that space in that I can have a bit more flexibility. But, yeah, it is taxing. I still will log into my emails outside of work. I still will be thinking about work outside of work. I guess that's what happens when you're in this type of role is – as soon as you're out of the office, that's when your brain's like, oh, remember that other thing that we were talking about.
It probably means you're also engaged and you're actually doing something you want to be doing, right?
Yes.
I think it's a good sign to say you're probably in the right spot.
Yeah. But, yeah, so everything's pretty good. Awesome. I've found the transition easier than expected, but I think I was very keen to come back to what I had created at NIB and just kind of bring it back to life, I suppose.
You mentioned before Newcastle tech scene.
Yes.
You've been around for a while, obviously. What's your thoughts on where Newcastle tech scene's at now versus, say, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, so I think as I mentioned to you before, it's been great seeing it evolve so much. Everybody in the tech scene wants to be there and is genuinely interested in what you're doing because it all helps improve the whole, I suppose. As I said, I'm really keen to start getting back into that scene. I haven't been as readily active in it, but I've been loving watching all the different things that are growing around the innovation hub type work that's happening, where you're getting different people from around the area talking about some of the cool things they're doing in tech. Like, that's sensational. If that's not inspiring for the Nui tech scene, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Being able to soundboard off ideas off other people, it's a really great community that has been built up here, and it's really great to see. Inspiring, really.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's good, and people like yourself, you know, adding to that scene, and that's what it's all about, right? It's that community aspect to it where, you know, you made a point there. It's just like giving back to the people that are, you know, to other people that are coming through, and that helps build the community in general, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's great for the relationships around as well. So things like the DevOps days, you know, have obviously been built by a network within those type of groups, such as the startups and things like that. When Nui startups started, it was just great that so many people from NIB, even though we weren't a startup, we wanted to go and be a part of it and make sure that we were able to help where we could in terms of soundboarding off ideas and things like that. Some of my best ideas have come from a few beers with a few of the crew from the startups, you know. Couldn't remember the next day, damn. But, you know, I think it's been really great for that idea generation and opportunities, like what could be available for you.
Yeah, it's that collaborative aspect as well, right? It's just seeing other people outside of, you know, outside of the community you work in on a day-to-day basis, like, what, who else is doing what? Is there something that I could learn? And I think the more of Newcastle does that as a whole, and it was a great example, is DevOps Days. There's people from NIB sharing their stories with people from other businesses and things like that. I think it levels Newcastle up as a whole.
I think these type of creative spaces as well seem like a little a money pit, I suppose, from a idea perspective.
Yeah.
So I have, you know, ideas around, well, what if people from some of the bigger organisations just came and hired a desk occasionally in these spaces? So you imagine the things you could learn from the creative community around that you could be bringing to the table and giving back.
Yeah.
I think that, for me, the fact that there is these collaborative spaces available for anybody who is going down a tech path or otherwise is a sensational thing to be a part of and have available. I'm interested in how that works and what that is doing for our community as well.
Yeah, I think it's just part of that evolution, right? There's different pockets and if it all comes together at some point, it'd be a perfect world.
Yeah, and the Newcastle tech scene has really enabled that to grow. And, you know, we're starting to get more big businesses in that are bringing more tech people in who are interested in that type of thing. So
yeah, I think it's a great perspective on the Newcastle scene. So thanks for your time today. If anyone wants any advice from Jess on building a career in females in tech or around that sort of optimization space, and if you're not currently tracking your website data,
get onto it.
Yes, and you want some feedback or just want a little bit of assistance on how to take those first steps, reach out to Jess. Best Spaces on LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn. I enjoy getting messages that aren't a sales pitch. It's fantastic.
Hopefully the community takes advantage of it.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, James.
Thanks for listening to this episode. You can find all information discussed on this episode on our website, newitechpeople.com.au. You can also find all the latest events happening in Newcastle on our website. Hopefully this will be a growing resource for you guys and help build our local tech community. Have a great day.